Well, good morning. Many of you have been here, some of you have not, so I just wanted to fill you in a little bit before we get into today's lesson. We've been studying what life is east of Eden. Eden was the epitome of God's purposes for His creation and humanity. Eden was like the Holy of Holies would come to be in the temple. It was a place where God's priests served. And they served God daily, and they enjoyed and delighted in His presence and in the rest of His creation. But we know that in Eden, that was also the place where humanity and all creation as a result fell. And so Adam and Eve were kicked out, and it wasn't just so much that they took and ate of a forbidden fruit. It was the very fact that they broke God's order. They broke the way that God designed everything to work. And when you place something in the place of God, chaos inevitably ensues. And we see this in our own life, don't we? When we step outside of the way God designed us to live and to work, you know, life is hard. It's hard all the time. Even if we're doing our very best to serve God and to walk in His ways, it's still hard. And it can be a struggle, and it's a grind. But we see that we have something that the world can't give us when we live in tune with God's way, and that's His eternal joy and peace. But when Adam and Eve stepped outside of this order, God banished them from the garden. But He didn't leave them alone. He tempered His judgment with His mercy. He actually clothed them and made the first animal sacrifice. But we see that sin has a progression to it. And it is interesting because as sin progresses, so does their move away. And the Bible talks, uses the language that humanity was moving east of Eden. And so you get to the story of Cain and Abel. And it goes from just individual choices to now it's familial sin. Brother against brother. And we still see that today, don't we? Each of us were created in the image of God to be beheld by one another. We were created to love. We were created to enjoy each other's presence. We were created for community. And yet we still live with the cry of Abel's blood from the ground. Tension. Strife. A life east of Eden. But it doesn't stop there. It continues to progress. So now it's not only individual sin of Adam and Eve or family sin of Cain and Abel. Now it is systemic. And the wickedness is society-wide. It's humanity-wide. When we get to Genesis chapter 6, and we see that, and we are introduced to this individual named Noah. And God has to make the painful choice of starting creation again. I can't imagine how difficult that decision must have been for God to make. And that's conjecture. We aren't told. But we are told that God grieved, right? It pained Him in His heart. And so it was a decision that God had to make because God is a just God. He cannot allow wickedness to just go rampant. Creation would have unraveled itself if He would not have taken those actions. So God chose a family who was standing upright before Him. And through this family and the few animals, He made a new covenant. He set His bow in the cloud. And we oftentimes think of that as a rainbow, and it very well is. But a bow is also a weapon of war in ancient times. And so He put His weapon of war in the clouds so that He would not again enact this kind of justice on earth. He would choose a different path because of His mercies, because of His compassion. And you would think as a humanity, right? Okay, we're learning, right? I mean, when your parents, when you were growing up, or you that are still children, when your parents tell you not to do something and you get disciplined, you immediately change your actions, right? The first time. All of you who are parents are laughing. All the kids are saying, of course I do, right? So we get to Genesis chapter 11. And as we get there, I want to tell a story about this little girl. Her name, and I know I'm mispronouncing her first name, and I apologize, but it's Sadako Sasaki. And Sadako Sasaki grew up in Japan in the early 1900s, or mid-1900s, rather. And she was 2 years old when the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. 2 years old. And her family lived just over a mile away from where it was actually dropped. And it destroyed everything. But they survived. Her and her family survived. But in trying to survive, they were fleeing. And as you know, after a bomb like that is dropped, there is fallout from it. And so ash began to rain down. And they became infected. They didn't know that. They didn't know that. So she actually began to grow up. And she, from all appearances, was a healthy young woman. Her family survived, established a life elsewhere, and she was active, very athletic. And then when she was 12 years old, she got sick. And the doctors brought her in. She went to the Red Cross that was there and ended up found out that she had leukemia. And come to be confirmed that it was due to the bomb that had been dropped. Now, I'm no war strategist. Actually, we have some here. and I'm not a military personnel. And I did not live in that time. And I cannot make a judgment one way or the other on whether this was appropriate actions or not to take. But what pains me and what breaks my heart is that we still live in a world that's east of Eden. We still live in a world in which this even has to be a reality, right? We live in a world that this has to be something that's considered because nations and people have this exalted sense of self that they are going to dictate the way of life for the rest of the world and that they will do whatever it takes to do so. It pains me that this was probably, this event was probably, you know, we hear this sort of terminology a lot, but a loss of innocence. Because we had never seen such wide-scale destruction in one single incident. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart that we live in a world that has to experience such a thing, that we even have to have those technologies to even protect our own selves. We get to Genesis chapter 11. And we see that we're living in a time after the flood. You can skip on the next. We live in a time after the flood, a time east of Eden. And of course, although we have great anticipation and hope that humanity would have learned from the deluge and all these other incidents that have happened, what we find is that they haven't. Now, the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." Babel exemplifies the peak of humanity's pride. So we're moving past Eden and humanity is progressing. And it's interesting because with our technological advancements, there are always positives, but there's already new opportunities for wickedness to prevail, right? I mean, we see this in our own day. A gun could be a great tool for hunting, right? For defending. It has a beauty in of itself, but it can also be a very destructive thing, can it? It can be used for murder. It can be used for some really terrible things. The internet. How many of you here did not use the internet in the past week? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but almost 99% of us probably did at some point or used something that used the internet. Speaking up, and the thing about it is the internet can be a fantastic tool, right? I mean, you can communicate with people all over the world in one instance, and you could communicate, you know, I love Mr. Rogers. You know what I'm talking about? The Mr. Rogers of TV with his sweater and his his, you know, his little tennis shoes and sitting down. And, you know, he won a lifetime award for, I get these all mixed, Emmys, whatever the daytime thing is. Okay, I don't watch that, but you know what I'm talking about. And he was to give an acceptance speech. And his vision for television and for mass media, like the internet and everything, was that it can be the primary means that we can use to communicate grace. Isn't that powerful? That is an amazing vision. Unfortunately, we as a humanity haven't caught up to that vision yet. Because while this can be a tremendous tool, our technology can also be used for very, very devastating and destructive things. And we see that happening every day. And so here we have a humanity that's advancing technologically and culturally. And they're saying, let's build a tower. And this tower will exemplify how great we are. Right? Because we all are great. I mean, that's our chief virtue as Americans, is how great we are. And we live very much with this in the shadow of Babel's tower. And so they did. And what's really interesting is that they didn't choose to build with the materials God had given them. They chose to make their own, right? God gave them stone and mortar. They chose to make their own materials, brick and bitumen, which is like a tar. And they said, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. Why would they want to build a tower with its top in the heavens? Who dwells in the heavens? God does. So let's build a tower that shows not only how great we are as a humanity, but how we can rival God in his own ability. I love what the writer of Genesis says next. Verse 5. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. It's interesting that we can build something that is so grand and so great and so incredible that we think, man, we're rivaling God and we can take God's position. And God has to come down just to be able to see it, right? Like, no matter what we do to exalt our own selves as a humanity, we cannot displace God's position in the cosmos. And that's an important thing for us to realize in our day, because in our day, anxieties abound. And I know I talk about this often, but I feel like our lives oftentimes just dwell and exist from one anxiety to the next. And we're so concerned about the externals, things that we have absolutely no control over. And we forget that very fact that God is still God. God is still God. So the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, and the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. From there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. If you recall, both in the beginning of Genesis, when God created humanity, and when Noah and his family and the animals stepped off the ark, God gave them a blessing and a calling. He said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Right? He gave them the exact same verbatim call, both in Genesis 1, 26, after he created them, after verse 26, and then in Genesis, whenever he was telling this to Noah. But what were they doing? They were not dispersing over the earth to fill it with his glory. What did they want to do? They wanted to settle. And instead of disperse over the earth to build for his glory, they wanted to settle in this plain to build for their glory. Right? Do you get what's happening here? So again, it's not just the very fact that they were building a tower. I mean, we build towers all the time. This is just an artist's rendition. We build skyscrapers, and we have the technologies to do this, and God doesn't do this all the time. But what we see here is that they were essentially stopping from communicating God's glory everywhere. And some very, very difficult and destructive things happen when we do that. When we take our eyes off of God, both as people, as a humanity, as well as the church, and we start looking at each other, and we stop progressing towards His glory and His mission, and we just stop and stay and look at each other, what tends to happen? We fight, don't we? We fight. There's a lot of infighting, a lot of name calling, a lot of war. But what's really fascinating about this passage is that God holds true to His covenant promise. After Noah's flood, as we call it, what did He say? I'll never punish the earth in this way again. And He doesn't, does He? God can do anything He wants to, and He's perfectly justified in doing so. But His love and His care and His self-giving on behalf of His humanity and His creation, He constrains and holds Himself back. He could have, again, wiped out all humanity, but He chose not to. He chose to deal with them in a way that shows His mercy by confusing their languages and, again, sending them out so that they would display His glory in all these different places. What's really interesting here is that with the start of the church, that there's a change in what God's doing. Wes, right? There are echoes of this story in the book of Acts. And I want to look there just briefly. Acts chapter 2, if you'll turn there with me. Why did God confuse? They had one language. They had one purpose before. That was God's intention. Why did they confuse that? Why did He confuse their languages and send them out? Because they weren't seeking His glory. They were seeking their own. Well, let's look at what happens in Acts chapter 2. What we traditionally call the birth of the church. When the day of Pentecost arrived, this is verse 1, they were all together in one place. I hear pages turning, I'll wait for just a second. Sorry, I get excited. I'm like, let's get in there and kind of look at this stuff. So, verse 1, when the day of Pentecost arrived, they were all together in one place. And suddenly there came from heaven a sound like a mighty rushing wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Interesting, because in Babel, they were trying to build themselves up to the heavens. But in this story, the heavens come down to us. And divided tongues as a fire appeared to them and rested on each one of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues or languages as the Spirit gave them utterance. Now there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. Luke, the writer here, is wanting us to see a parallel. He's wanting us to see that, look, all the nations were present at Babel. Now all the nations are present from under the heavens here at Pentecost. At Babel, what happened? Their languages were confused and they were sent out. Here, they all hear it in one common language, don't they? In verse 6, and at this sound the multitude came together and they were bewildered because each one was hearing them speak in his own language. And they were amazed and astonished, saying, are not all these who are speaking Galileans? And how is it that we hear, each of us in his own native language, Parthians and Medes and Elamites and the residents of Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya belonging to Cyrene, and visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabians, we hear them telling in our own tongues the mighty works of God. The original intention for their one common language in the beginning was to tell of God's glory. And here at the birth of the church, they have the ability to do that again. And guess what? Also in chapter 2, if we look in verse 42, after Peter has preached his message, convicting them of what they had done as those people to Jesus, in verse 42, and they are added to the church, and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. They had a common purpose. One not dividing them, but one that united them. One not that was exalting how great our structures are, or our purposes are, or our technologies are, but one exalting how great our God is and His purposes in our world. Babel challenges us to ask us, what towers are we building in our life? What structures are we erecting to show how great we are? That's tough. Because in our responsive reading, we kind of talk about, even in our best intentions, sometimes there's a little bit of, I want to be known. I want to be appreciated. I want to be admired. I used to have, where I used to be on the whiteboard, I had it wrote, it said, speak to be understood, not admired. And that was something I had to remind myself to every day. That it's about what God's doing, not about what we are doing. And when we get that order right, when we get that picture right, and when we start building the right kind of towers, instead of towers to our own greatness as a world and as a nation and as a people, things will change. Unfortunately, as a humanity as a whole, humanity hasn't caught up to that vision, has it? That we as the church hold. That we can once again speak a common language and be a common humanity working towards building for something eternal. Building for the kingdom of God. How do we do that? See, this tale prods us to build something that is going to last. Getting back to young Sasaki's story and Sarah Ashland, I don't know where you are, her and her family, made all of the origami swans that you guys have. So please make sure to thank her. She made 160. And then I didn't even ask her, but she made this. It was suggested that I wear this as a hat, but I don't know. That may be too distracting. Young Sasaki, when she went to the hospital, she really didn't know what to do. She's being treated. And there's this tale in Japan that if you make 1,000 origami cranes, thank you. I think I said swan, but cranes, thank you. 1,000 origami cranes that you will be healed. And so she worked feverishly, finding whatever materials she could. And there's different stories that are told, but most, and what her parents told, is that she got to 644 and she passed away. But she gave them to everybody she knew. And her friends, after her passing, made the rest of the 1,000. And there's a memorial there today that has a girl holding up one of these that is a reminder, and it has become a symbol of building for something, not showing how great we are or how much devastation we can cause to one another, but really building for something that God calls us all to build for. And that's His peace. And that's His peace. And so we have the opportunity to build every day. I used to always say that as Christians, we're like cosmic kingdom builders. We're cosmic construction workers or something like that. We all should start. Next time I'm going to buy hard hats and we'll just all wear, no one will have a clue what's going on. But we are building for something that is going to last beyond our lifetime. And we may never see the fruits of it. And that's okay. We've got to be okay with that. But we know that we are building for peace. We're building for love. We're building for compassion. We're building for salvation. We're building for hope. We're building for something that is true, that is authentic, that is real. And so examine yourself and say, what towers have I been building? And do they look like that? Do they look like hope? Do they look like joy? Do they look like peace? Because that's what Christ calls us. He says, my peace I give you, my peace I leave with you, not as the world gives. It's not just lack of conflict. It's something that's truly sustaining for eternity. And so this morning, if you never experienced the peace of Christ that can come into your heart and transform you, if your life just feels like you're dwelling and existing from one anxiety to the next, or you say, look, I'm building a tower, but it's not to His glory. and you need to ask Christ for forgiveness, or you need prayers of the family, or you need strength, then please come as we stand and sing. And if you've never come to Christ, that He calls you to confess to Him and to ask for His forgiveness, to be immersed into Him. And when you do that, He sets you on a new path and on a new journey, one of purpose, one of mission, one of salvation that is eternal. If you need to respond to Him, or if you want to pull one of us aside afterwards, then please respond as we stand and as we sing.